It's time for Sweet Home Cannabama, a show that'll answer all your questions, provide accurate information, and dispel the myths of cannabis. And have your specific questions answered by emailing jennifer@cannabama.com or text or call 343-0106. And now, for all things cannabis in Alabama, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm your host, Jennifer Boozer Stewart. You're listening to Sweet Home Cannabama right here in Mobile, Alabama. We have been on the air for over 6 years now, talking about all things cannabis in Alabama and nationwide. We're going to be kicking off our Veterans Month shows tonight. I have a very special guest in the second segment for the rest of the show. I'm very excited to finally get him on the show, but I want to give you a bunch of news. First of all, last Friday, I talked about being my 11-year clean anniversary from pain pill addiction. I'm very proud of that. And I got to do a podcast interview after I did the show last week with a new friend named Carrie Helmer. And she is from Michigan, and we met through a mutual friend on Facebook, and she said she was starting a podcast talking about how people going through great transitions, anything hard in life, you know, kind of in the middle of going from one thing to a next, just positive affirmation and how people cope with those things. And I said, well, boy, have I been a transitional kind of girl, and I would be happy to come on your show. And so I was actually her first official guest, and her podcast is called Project U 2.2. Now, for those of you who haven't heard it, I would encourage you, if you know anybody who's struggling with grief, addiction, hard things, such as all the things that I've been going through lately, most of the podcast, we did not talk about cannabis or Cannabama. There was a few mentions. Obviously, it's a big part of my life in the last 7 years, but it's mostly about losing my son and going through the addiction and recovery process and kind of a lot of things that I've learned along the way, advice I would give to anybody in those situations. So you can find that on my Jennifer Boozer Stewart Facebook page. You can also look it up, Project U 2.2 with Carrie Helmer. It was an amazing honor to be her first guest, and I hope that my testimony will encourage other people who are facing really, really hard things. You know, we do recover, we do move on, we do overcome, and it was an incredibly validating experience. So thank you to Carrie for allowing me to tell my story on your podcast. I want to get into current events. The national hemp industry is under attack by the very senator from Kentucky who championed it, Mitch McConnell. And from Kentucky, and Anthony Harris from Maryland are trying to sneak devastating language into the continuing resolution that would end the government shutdown. It's ridiculous. It would basically be any quantifiable amount of THC, which would wipe out 95% of products on the market, even CBD products, and would put farmers out of business across the country immediately. And on the flip side of that, Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, we did a couple of Zooms with the hemp farmers and hemp industry and Farmers Association of America. I probably butchered that name, with Rand Paul, and he is fighting for legislation that would change the 0.3% Delta 9 THC to 1% THC by dry weight, and that would help prevent lost crops. That 0.3% is a really arbitrary number. I haven't gotten a straight answer from anybody where it actually came from, but I think somebody heard it or read it somewhere and just took it, and that's this entire thing is based on some weird arbitrary number. But it will help prevent lost crops, yield more of a harvest, because if they are allowed to grow the plants a little bit longer, they'll get way more material to work with, whether that is consumable product material or fiber or the ability to make hemp lime construction products, any of those things, and obviously produce more end result products and materials. You can. We need everybody's help on this. This is nationwide. It doesn't matter what's happening in the states so much. If this happens and if they get this in the continuing resolution, everybody wants the government to function. Everybody is, you know, they're using this whole situation with SNAP benefits and pay for the military and all the things that are all jacked up right now. Everybody wants the government to go back to functioning. So that those people don't have to do without. And this is diabolical to sneak this little bit of language into this big continuing resolution bill before the Appropriations Committee. So email Mitch McConnell and Anthony Harris from Maryland. Email your own U.S. senator and congressman. Ask them to help stop this. Ask them not to do this, to consider the loss to all of the businesses, much less the product consumers, and people who have invested their entire lives. Again, this is happening nationwide now. It's interesting. Seth Rogen came out against this nationwide THC ban. He has a brand of THC drinks that are hemp-derived. Cheech and Chong put out a post about the same thing. So it looks like the celebrities are finally entering the chat. These guys are well-known in the recreational cannabis world. And, you know, they're all live in California where it's been legal forever, but they all have products that are hemp derived because, duh, you can ship them nationwide. There's a whole lot less red tape and you can actually maintain a decent business that way. And so they are now entering the chat to ask not, to ask them not to pass this backdoor ban nationwide. So it's nice to have them. I posted earlier today, is it rude for me to say, where have you guys been up to now? But anyway, moving on. One point of clarity on HB 445 here in Alabama and the ABC rules that have recently come out. There's so much just junk to wade through. But one of the things that I think is upsetting is that you can sell, with this new licensing and stuff, you can sell hemp and liquor together in a liquor store. You can sell hemp and groceries in a grocery store as long as it's 14,000 square feet or bigger. But if you sell hemp like I did in a dispensary, you cannot sell anything else. So in no mushroom, functional mushrooms, no probiotics, no collagen, no fiber, none of the things that a lot of us, ashwagandha and black seed oil that were in some of the products that we were carrying. I know some of the businesses around the state are trying to add other natural wellness products. That was our idea in order to hopefully revive Cannabama. Not going to happen now. Because we're not allowed to do that. So not only did they take most of our products that we've been selling all this time, now we cannot sell anything else. It makes no sense. And I know a lot of people who are in recovery that do not want to have to go to a liquor store in order to get their plant medicine. And I don't know who they think that's going to benefit. But hemp only, unless you are a liquor store or a grocery store. So that's unfortunate for us. On that note, I am selling all of my furniture, displays, equipment, decor, everything that was in the Cannabama store and most of what was in my house in Mobile. I've got married. I'm moving. We have two houses full of stuff anyway, but I cannot afford to hang on to all this stuff and hope that things are going to get better, because they're just not right now. And maybe one day, if they do, we'll figure that part out. But stay tuned. Follow me, Jennifer Boozer Stewart, on Facebook, and I will be announcing that as soon as possible. Hopefully, we'll be able to do a big sale this weekend, November 7th and 8th. But there's a chance I may be going out of town at the last minute for something important. So I'm not sure yet. Bear with me. But if you love anything that was in Cannabama, that blue couch, that purple chair, all of it will be for sale. So I just want you guys to remember all of these things when you go to vote. I'm trying really hard to just be a single-issue voter. We've gotten nowhere in the state of Alabama just voting straight ticket, all up the party line. Again, I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I've never even voted Democrat. I have voted Republican. it doesn't matter to me anymore what the R or the D, I don't care. I want this put to bed in the state of Alabama. I want access for every Alabamian in a fair and equitable way. I want people to be able to get the medicine that they need. The elderly in this state, people who don't have health insurance, people who are sick and tired of drugs from the pharmacy, our veterans, all of these people, they deserve better. You know, I've been to all over the country to these expos, and I'm usually the only one from Alabama there, and I'm trying desperately to say, hey, don't count Alabama out. We deserve this too. But it's very, very hard to get help from the outside when we won't help ourselves. So remember these things when you go to vote this year, and vote Green Alabama. When we come back, Will Wisner from Grunt Style Foundation for Veterans Month. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about cannabis, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back, everybody. Like I said at the top of the hour, we are starting our Veterans Month of shows this month with Will Wisner from Grunt Style Foundation. These shows are incredibly special to me. This is our sixth year to dedicate the month of November strictly to veterans issues and how cannabis can help them. So I'm very proud to introduce Will to you tonight. Will Wisner is the executive director of the Grunt Style Foundation, a nonprofit dedicated to supporting service members, veterans, first responders, and their families. An Iraq War veteran and toxic exposure survivor, Will faces ongoing health challenges from his deployment and an experience that fuels his passion for advocacy. Through his leadership, the foundation champions mental health, wellness, and advocacy on the unique issues impacting the military community. Welcome to the show, Will.
Hey, Jennifer. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm really excited. My friend John Grady has been singing your praises for ever. I can't even tell you how long, and I'm really, really excited that we finally made this happen. And what a way to start Veterans Month. Tell us about your service. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are we listening to tonight?
Sure. So I was a kid, grew up in the Ozark Mountains of southwest Missouri. So I wasn't a particularly good student in those days. I was a solid D-minus average, probably, I would say. More concerned with other things. And so very rural area, very, very bad economy there, you know, a lot of poverty. So I didn't have a lot of options. I certainly wasn't going to college. And so, you know, I always figured from early on the military was going to be my way into a much larger world, right?
And, right.
You know, it turns out the military is not especially stable either. You know, you come out of that experience and your peer group is a bunch of 18-year-old kids. So you've got to really figure things out in that transition period. That's why it's so important. But
right.
I got out in the summer of 2001, and then after 9/11, I re-enlisted and went back onto the active duty side of the house again, and spent some time in Korea, then down at Fort Knox, and then finally over at Fort Benning, Georgia. And from there, I deployed with the 3rd Brigade, 3rd Infantry Division. I was a Cav Scout, 3-1 Cav. And ended up over in OIF-5, which I was there from March of 2007 until June of 2008.
Wow.
And so we did 15 months there. I spent 12 of those 15 months at the Altawatha nuclear complex, which if you're old enough to remember back before the war kicked off,
right,
when the United Nations was looking for the weapons of mass destruction, they had the guys in the hazmat suits going in and out of this complex with these big berms around it. Well, that's Altawatha.
Wow.
And we blew the hell out of that thing in 2003 on the Thunder Run. And so then it just sat dormant until 2007. Because during that time, the locals in the village had discovered these thousands of barrels of yellow cake, which they didn't know was yellow cake, or probably know what it was. And they were dumping these barrels, and they were cooking in these barrels, and they were washing their clothes in these barrels. So, you know, fast forward 4 years to 2007, and the Army decides they need to do something with those barrels. So they turned that installation into Combat Outpost Cache, and we put a presence there to kind of sit on it until they could figure out what to do with this stuff. During that time, my platoon, I was in a, it was called the TST. I was a brigade level asset. So, we worked out of that outpost. So, we knew going in that probably was not going to bode well at some point in the future, despite the assurances from the, environmental service folks.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
Came back really toxic. A lot of all my friends were toxic. We've had, you know, some deaths and neurological issues and all these things. And then on top of that, you know, your normal war experience.
Right.
And unfortunately, you know, this war's experience was also involving the burn pits there on these military installations. That's how they got rid of all the trash that would accumulate.
Right.
And douse it in jet fuel and light it on fire. Well, and we lived right next to it. So I kind of caught it at both ends when I got home. And in June, I only had a couple more months until my final out had arrived. I got out and moved to St. Louis. And so that's kind of my background on the military side.
Wow. I don't even know what to say. I've never talked to anybody before that had that much toxic exposure. That's a horrible story about these people cooking and washing their clothes out of these toxic barrels. I mean, how did that affect that local community? How did it affect you to be exposed to that? What did that actually do to you?
Well, how it infected the locals was, you know, exactly what you would expect coming from, you know, bathing and eating and cooking and washing clothes and that kind of stuff. And then, you know, of course, absorbing it in all the different ways that they did.
Right.
And so you caused a lot of cancers, a lot of weird birth defects. You know, it became to the point the government really didn't have any choice but to respond to that.
Right.
And so that's how we ended up there. Now, how it impacted me, you know, I had a lot of issues coming back from Iraq. You know, the toxic exposure stuff was certainly, you know, present in my mind, but it probably wasn't foremost. And as time went along and, you know, I was trying to figure out the civilian life, I had all the issues that came along with the regular wartime experience, and that was really kind of ruling the roost.
Right.
And when I would go to the VA, I would say, hey, you know, I'm also concerned. I lived in this nuclear reactor and all this stuff. And, you know, they're like, well, you know, have some head meds if you're not feeling well, and you know, we'll put you on some psychotropics. And I went down that road for a little while,
right,
until, you know, I recognized this is not a good thing for me. And I was seeing, you know, patterns. And of course, in the veteran community, you know, they refer to these psychotropic pills as zombie dope. Mm. And, you know, once I had that experience, I knew that was kind of enough for me. And I successfully got off that stuff pretty easily.
Yeah.
But my regular life was a train wreck and just, you know, really kind of a pitiful tale, it's what motivated me as people around me were getting more and more sick from these different issues, whether it was the burn pits or people from my unit with, you know, Altawaita and all that.
Right.
I saw the same story playing out over and over again, and it was one where the VA seems to be under a lot of pressure to get people through. So, you know, diagnosis and a treatment, you know, you're out the door, we'll see you at your follow-up.
Right.
And so everybody was, you know, really getting these PTSD diagnoses, many of which are, of course, you know, absolutely appropriate. But I think a lot of them probably aren't. I think a lot of them are probably dealing with head trauma and or PTSD. And, you know, a lot of these symptoms that go along with those two issues,
right,
the symptoms look a lot like post-traumatic stress.
Well, that, yeah, I mean, traumatic brain injuries. And, you know, also I imagine that the heavy metal exposures and the toxin exposures absolutely affect the mental health as well. I mean, there's so many reasons
absolutely
why you and these other guys would be experiencing any number of these symptoms besides the trauma, you know, all of these other things, you know, an IED you know, it, even if you come out of it seemingly unscathed, it, what it does to the brain is insane. You know, it's worse than playing a lot of football sometimes, you know, and those guys, you know, have tremors at 40 because of brain injuries. So I imagine that all of those different contributing factors, along with the meds, and I'm sure, you know, maybe, and we didn't talk about this at all, but I'm sure there was a little bit of military drinking in there and God knows what else, you know, that would contribute to the imbalance of brain chemistry and neurological effects. So it's amazing. You could string sentences together, honey.
Well, there was a time not so long ago that I couldn't.
Wow. You know, I was just trying to be funny. I did not mean to downplay that. I'm sorry. Oh, no, gosh. Yeah, right. Foot in mouth, Jennifer.
You can't laugh about it.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about Grunt Style. What is Grunt Style Foundation?
So Grunt Style Foundation is the philanthropic arm of the patriotic apparel brand, Grunt Style. It's the largest patriotic apparel brand by many leagues.
Yes.
So they do an awful lot of good stuff and have over the years. And they had decided in 2021 that they were going to stand up a private foundation and, you know, make that more formalized. And so I came along December of 2021, and they kind of shifted gears away from pushing the money to this organization or that organization, said, hey, we've built something really cool with Grunt Style. Let's do something really cool with it.
Right.
You know, so we took off after setting our own programs up and really focusing on those issues that everyone just writes off as being the status quo. That's just how things are. You're not going to change it. You know, let's go after those issues. If
right.
I understand it's a problem and everybody else understands it's a problem, why are we still allowing this to be a problem?
Right.
And so those are the issues that we go after.
Right. Well, and so give us an example of some things you're working on.
Oh, currently we've got our fingers in quite a bit of things. We made our big bones, I guess, with the passage of the PACT Act. We were very instrumental in getting health coverage to over 3 million veterans that
nice.
Previously were being denied due to a lack of, you know, attribution of the military service, that service connection to these things. So we provided for what's called presumption. So if you have this issue and you're in a certain place at a certain time and you have this illness, then it's presumed to be a result of your service. So that's
right.
what the game we were fighting with for so many years, and we lost so many people throughout that time. That's actually how I got into the nonprofit world. I actually did go back to college just so I could get a master's degree in nonprofit management, and it turns out if you read your book and do your homework, you make A's. So I kind of figured that part, how to turn that part around.
Right.
Just found it very late in life. But so, yeah, I ended up, that's how I engaged it. So now here today, we focus on mental health and wellness. We focus on advocacy. So those are kind of our major areas.
Right.
And in the mental health and wellness side, we have a program called Irreverent Warriors. We have about 70 chapters across the country.
Let me stop you right there. We're going to pick up right after the commercial break with Will Wisner, and we're going to talk about Irreverent Warriors. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about cannabis, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Jennifer Boozer Stewart, your host on Sweet Home Cannabama, right here every Monday night at 7 o'clock for the last six years, like 4 months already. We're here tonight with Will Wisner from Grunt Style Foundation. Will, right before the break, I'm sorry I had to cut you off there. But you mentioned Irreverent Warriors. Let's go back and tell us what Irreverent Warriors is.
Sure. We have chapters, about 70 IW chapters across the country, and these are silky hikes, the little tiny PT shorts or physical training shorts that you wear in service. They're ridiculous. You
uh-huh.
know? But when you're wearing them, everybody, the ice falls away and everybody connects easier. So that's kind of the way we use those. But
right.
But just veterans, a chance for people to get together and, you know, be among people that have a common shared experience and they speak that same language.
Right.
And it's a place to try to reengage in that camaraderie and peer support that's very difficult to find once you leave the military. So we try to recreate an element of that. So that's our main frontline effort. They're going all over the country. There's probably one close to you. Then we have a few other lines of effort that we have. We have an event we call Integration. This is built on a principle that we call our triangular compass modalities. It means that it's attempting to heal or engage the mind, the body, and the spirit as a modality. Now,
right.
Many people don't know this, but you know, we lost 57,000-58,000 veterans during Vietnam. We lost about 7,000 to 8,000 between Iraq and Afghanistan combined. But since 9/11, we have lost 162,000 veterans to suicide.
Oh, my
and
God.
That's a huge number. And if more people
it
understood
is.
That in that context, I think there'd be outrage.
Yes, I mean, you always hear the statistic. It's every, you know, like 22 veterans a day or something like that. That's a small, I mean, that's not a small number, but it in comparison to the number you just said as a totality, that is, that, oh, that hurts.
And the story gets worse. You know, we started taking a look at this as our foundation, you know, what's going on here? And, you know, this trend only gets worse. And, you know, the VA, this past suicide report for 2024, they came out of this thing as if, you know, their big news was that, you know, the rate of increase was a little less than it was before. It still increased, just not as much as it had the year before. So, you know, that's, we're going to take a victory lap.
Well, and let's nonsense. Pat everyone so, on the back for that travesty. Oh, my gosh, that makes me sick.
So when we get looking into this thing and really start understanding it and talk to the experts and, you know, and again, like back earlier in our discussion, I was talking about the zombie dope. Everybody in the veteran community knows, you know, this is just part of the VA experience is dealing with these pills, and navigating, you know, all the things that go along with them. Well,
right.
We have found out that 68% of all veterans in the VHA, which is the healthcare side, the hospitals, you know, of the VA, 68% of all these veterans are on these psychotropic medications. And that goes back to that pressure the VA has been experiencing to, you know, get you diagnosed, get you treated, get you on your way. You know, if you come in with a boo-boo that you need seen about, you know, they're going to go through those questions. How are you feeling today? Have you been depressed in the last week or 2 weeks? And, you know, all those questions. Well, most everybody would score high enough just through daily
right.
life, you know.
Right.
That's when they offer these pills. And then you go into this. A lot of these people are in compromised positions while they're there anyway. And it's a hostile system. You have to try to navigate this thing, and it's just demonic in its design of how what all has to be done. So you're already in this weird, confounded state mentally, and you've got this oppositional healthcare system that's, you know, denying you benefits, or you've got to prove this or that. Like we're talking about the burn pits and all that. You know, if you, you know, there was no code for constrictive bronchiolitis, therefore you're denied and you're just sick. Well, what do you do now?
Wow.
Well, you wait to die, but hey, have some head meds so you don't really care as much while that's happening.
Right.
So what? And why I'm harping on these head meds is because they come with a very scary side effect, and that is an increase in suicidal ideation. So you think about that. We are giving people that are already compromised and maybe suicidal already, and we're giving them a pill that has a known side effect to increase their level of suicidal ideation. And then we wonder, well, why in the hell do we have 22 veterans a day killing themselves? Well, maybe it's because we have 68% of everybody on the things.
Right.
You know, so I mean, this
and,
is
well,
worse
and when they come in, when they come in for these doctor visits and these evaluations, they are desperate. They are scared.
Right.
They are depressed. They are having anxiety and night terrors and flashbacks for all of the terrible traumatic things that they went through in that situation, coming back home, trying to reintegrate into normal American society. And that's got to be 10 times worse than probably anywhere else, because we're like, is life even real in America anymore? But all of those things in combination, these people are desperate for some kind of relief. They'll try anything. You know, and I've been in that position myself. I'll do whatever you tell me to do. If it'll make the nightmares stop, if it'll make these thoughts stop, if I can sleep, you know, if I can cope with this and not want to just explode all the time. And then they give them these medications and they flood their brain with all these chemicals. I mean, really, it's worse to me than anything else that we can't do better than that. But that is also happening on a large scale to the rest of society. So
exactly.
It makes total sense why an exorbitant amount of the veteran community would be in that position or take that desperate act because they can't escape this inevitable just circle of pills and trauma and pills and hard times and pills and stress. It makes me so upset to even think about it. And I've met these guys. I know these guys. You know, my dad's whole family, the men in my dad's family, were all in the military. I watched them drink themselves to death, you know, and end up with cancer and emphysema and a half of a person, you know, a shell of a person most of their life. And it makes no sense because the veteran community should be getting the best we have to offer because they're the only ones you guys are the only ones who have said, I'll do it. Even if I might die, I'll do it. You know, I could never do that. I just, I don't have it in me. And I'm incredibly grateful for the people who are willing to do that. And I think we have failed on every level as a society, as a country, because we're supposed to be the most powerful nation in the country with the biggest military and all the things. We're so big and great and powerful, but we leave the people that need us the most in the worst ditches on the side of the road. And it really is disgusting.
Absolutely. And, you know, that horror nightmare pill factory of healthcare system that we have, that is the status quo.
Right.
And so that ties back into that other part of what our foundation does, is we carry the message not only inside of our Reverent Warrior programs where we're reaching veterans all over the country with it, but just to anyone that'll listen to us or hear our voice. And that is, we have to reject the status quo, because that is the status quo.
Right.
And our main message here is like, look, you may be dealing with grief. You may be dealing with fear. You may be dealing with all these different things. Well, guess what? Those are feelings, and feelings are normal.
Right.
And when we're going down the road of these psychotropic medications, we're medicating normal. We are taking away the opportunity to take these emotions that are the result of whatever trauma we may have experienced,
yes,
whatever that may be, big or small, and then we have to integrate them into ourselves. We have to learn from them so we become this evolved person in our path in this life.
Right,
and
learn how to cope with them so that we can move past them and have some sort of normalcy. And that applies to any trauma. You know, I get that very deeply. But yes, why are we numbing these problems? Because they're there. They're tearing these people apart from the inside out. And instead of teaching them to cope and loving them through it in a way that benefits them, now we're just going to dope them up and hope maybe they don't walk into the lobby of the VA and blow their brains out. It's awful. That, to me, every time I hear a story about a veteran who kills themselves, especially at the VA or at a base, I'm like, they are desperately trying to show the people in charge that I'm not the only one, that this is real, that you have to deal with this, but they can't cope anymore. And if a veteran killing themselves in the parking lot of a VA isn't enough to make change, I don't know what is. I mean, I don't know what it is.
That's very true, and there's been 17 that I'm aware of,
wow,
these instances where veterans have taken their lives. We just have been working this year with Dr. Miller. He was the father of a Navy veteran named Mark Miller,
mm-hmm,
and he was one of those veterans. He had been begging for years to come help get off these pills, because once you're on them, it's not that you're addicted. These psychotropics are not an addictive medication.
Right.
What it is you become dependent. Because coming off of these things, is a hell all on its own.
Oh, yeah.
And if you try to come off these things too fast or in the wrong, if you don't have the titration dialed in, which is extremely difficult discipline, it's something they don't teach doctors. None of them that I know or met have known anything about titration.
Right.
But they come off these things too fast. They get what's called akathisia. And it's like lightning going across your brain just all the time while you're trapped in a car with the windows down and it's making that weird whoop, 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 you know, thing through your, you know, affecting your wrist. The suicide is the release, you know, from that situation.
Right.
So, yeah, we've been sharing Dr. Miller's story and his son's story. You know, we've done a big press conference in D.C. on this issue. We're trying to educate and get the word out. But all these things are in the same issue of the status quo,
right,
which is the medicating of the normal and causing the suicidal ideation, which I believe is what is causing these incredible numbers of suicides. So we advocate on that, and what our message is we don't know what is right for you. Only you are going to heal you if we're dealing in terms of mental health,
right?
And PTSD. And there are many paths up the mountain, and I'm not here to tell you one way is better than another. We do in our program and our podcast called The Triangular Compass. We highlight as many different alternative modalities as we can.
Yes.
We've done beekeeping, we've done equine therapy, qigong, tai chi, movement, meditation. But we've also gotten to those other areas of big tools that are a big hot topic in the veteran community right now. That's cannabis and that's psychedelics.
Mm-hmm.
And both of these are, you know, they may not be for everybody, but it is a path. And, you know, as efficacious as what we know, both cannabis, which is a psychedelic, and
right,
as well as the more higher grade psychedelics, if we can, you know, just access these things,
right,
then let us pick on our own. You know, I don't need the government to help me anymore by, you know, keeping me from accessing those things,
right,
that are helpful.
Right.
And, in, you know, my own case, I'm a toxic exposure guy. I have so much heavy metal in me, it's insane. And it stores itself in my joints. And I have this weird stress release if I get too emotionally worked up or stressed for too long, or if I injure myself in some way, that seems to kick it off. And this is like, I mean, the only thing I could explain it as is like gout mixed with childbirth in levels of intensity and pain. And I am in a wheelchair or bedridden for up to 2 months at a time waiting for this stuff to go down.
Oh,
and
wow.
Steroids don't help. Nothing helps with it. But, you know, there's a CBD strain my friend John Grady makes, Dolore, that
yes,
seems to tackle it.
The Dolore tincture. When we come back from the break, we'll have more with Will Wisner from Grunt Style Foundation. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about cannabis, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back, everybody. Tonight we've been talking with Will Wisner, who is with the Grunt Style Foundation. This is our first of four Veterans Month shows, and we've been talking about all of the issues that so many of our veterans face and the medications that they are given in the VA that are not helping, and the high rate of veteran suicide in this country. Will, right before the break, you mentioned that the Dolore tincture from our friend, our mutual friend, John Grady, at Slap Happy Hemp. That is a shameless plug for my friend John Grady's product. If you need a connection, let me know. Tell us why you like the Dolore tincture for your joint pain. I mean, you were just describing unimaginable amounts of joint pain. So tell us what the Dolore tincture does for you.
Yeah, I mean, it does what CBD does, man. It goes in there and, you know, it is inhibiting the pain signals,
you know,
blocking the neurotransmitter release at the spine and the brain levels and reducing the inflammation and all these things that, you know, this plant just naturally does, because as human beings, we have an endocannabinoid system,
yes,
we're designed to operate with this plant, and where these other options that I have, which, by the way, many of them are destructive to your organs, where those don't begin to touch it, this natural plant, you know, harvested from the earth, seems to just work, and it's really weird that we're built for those things, and those things do those things. So,
right.
You know,
I thought it was I would have said miraculous the first time that I tried it as a long-term chronic pain patient, and I had walked away from OxyContin for about 3 years and still struggled with joint pain, migraines, awful PMS. I had insomnia, all sorts of things. And before I understood that my body was made to use cannabinoids and to have this nutrition to help combat inflammation, I just knew I had just had surgery. And for me, the CBD that did not get me high in any way, shape, or form was better for my surgical pain, my joint pain, and I slept through the night for the first time, than morphine in an IV had been in the hospital. And that broke my brain wide open, and I had to know what the heck just happened to me. And because I wanted to tell everyone I ever met, you know, and I had to figure out, how do I even tell them what this is? You know, I come from below the Bible Belt, I like to say, and grew up in a Christian home in the 80s during the DARE program, and this is your brain on drugs. I rejected it at first, thinking, oh, I'm in recovery, you know, I can't do that, and it changed my life. So, I know exactly. It is, to me, it was better than anything they had given me, either IV or by mouth, for pain. And I mean, sleeping through the night for the first time in 14 years will change your whole life.
It'll make you a believer.
Yeah, heck yeah. It did. I say this all the time. My listeners are rolling their eyes, but I remember waking up and thinking, am I dead? Because it had been so long since I had slept from nighttime to morning time in the same place through the night. Right. And it really, I mean, I've never been a great sleeper, but I lost my son, and the trauma of that situation made me an insomniac, and CBD changed that for me in one serving. What about other things? I mean, we talked about PTSD and traumatic brain injury, pain, you know, depression, anxiety, all of those things. There's so many things, you know, amputations, bullet wounds, all sorts of things that these guys come back home with, besides the toxic exposure, which no one ever thinks about, by the way. When you said that to me the other day, I was like, oh, I wonder what that means. And then you said burn pits, and I was like, okay, well, he was exposed to a bunch of stuff. I had no idea the story you were about to tell in the show and how bad it was, but no one even thinks about how that affects the immune system, the brain, your neurological system, your nerve endings, even everything, your central nervous system, I'm sure, and how that affects every aspect of your life. If you're not right in your mind and in your heart, if your heart is unsettled and your mind is just going crazy, it doesn't matter if your body is in good condition. If you cannot think and sleep and interact with other human beings in a normal way, you know, it just, what is life? I get why people take their own lives. I've been there myself with the suicidal ideation from being on OxyContin and pain pills for 10 years. It does something to your brain, but being able to use something natural, obviously they've tried it all. Why do they keep doing the same thing over and over and over again? The VA is, I mean, that's the definition of insanity. They just keep doing it and doing it and doing it. Why not stop and say, okay, this isn't working, let's do something else? You know,
yeah,
we talk a lot about cannabis. What other issues have you seen it help with the most among the veterans that you know and interact with in your own service experience, as well as through the foundation and all your advocacy work? You know, what are you seeing that works for people?
Well, I mean, you hit the big three, right? TBI, PTSD, and, you know, chronic pain. Those mm-hmm. are the three big categories. I would say, I don't know that any one of those is more prominent in use as far as reasons why people engage them. I think it's just understood at this point.
Right.
I think most of society gets it. to some degree at this point.
Right.
And it's not a matter of merit. I mean, this is a matter of the way the system is designed. And this is all resorts back to money at the end of the day. And it also resorts back to politics, right? Everybody that's in charge of the ugly baby has to justify the ugly baby.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter, you know, nobody's going to tell them it's ugly and they're going to, oh, yeah, you know, and then take the steps that are necessary. They're not going to do it.
Right.
So they're going to come up with all these other reasons of why this stuff is okay. And when they can't do that and they're backed into the corner, then they start screaming out what's the alternatives. And when you give them this demonstrably effective modalities like cannabis, you know, for the mind and the body, and psychedelics, you know, for the mind and the spirit, they will then point at this fact that, well, there's no clinical studies to support this. Well, of course not, because you can't study cannabis because it's a Schedule I, and who's going to pay billions of dollars, literally, to the FDA? 80% of their revenue comes from big pharma testing these things in clinical trials.
Right.
So who's going to make that investment without the return on the investment on the backside when you can't patent this plant?
Right.
You can't patent, you know, a mushroom, you know? So
right.
then we start, that's why you see all the studies that are going on use synthetics because that can be patented. And then once they get through the clinical trials, it comes time to put them into the ecosystem. Well, you can only use this one synthetic because that's what was tested and we know that works. And if we were to use the natural version, that's not been tested. Dogs may be sleeping with cats and it's raining upside down and the world will come unglued. And it's nonsense.
Well, and they can't exactly do right by the veterans without it going unnoticed for the rest of us who are dealing with similar issues like pain, PTSD, traumatic brain injury, CTE, all the things, because we all suffer, like you said, to some degree. There's car crash victims and, you know, all sorts of injuries and attacks and reasons that people end up with mental and physical pain. If we saw the veterans having huge success with cannabis and mushrooms and even the Ibogaine that they've been talking about a lot lately, then we would expect that too. We would want that too, and they can't let that happen. Don't you think?
And that's what's coming. If we can topple the VA in terms of engagement on both psychedelics as opposed to psychotropics, to include cannabis, then the game's over. You know, that's going to trickle out to the rest of society, and that's what we hope for. Because look, guys, this is what's on the line. You mentioned Ibogaine.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you an interesting thing about Ibogaine. And there's anecdotal evidence at this point. You know, I'd say they would call it preclinical because there's no real, you know, there's very minor amounts of this stuff going on. This stuff apparently cures certain neurological disorders, for example, Parkinson's. Let me say that again.
Wow.
Cures these neurological issues. Not treat symptoms, not shove symptoms down.
Right.
Cures.
Right.
This stuff works by regrowing the white matter in the brain.
Yeah.
And it restores all these circuits and pathways that may have been compromised or damaged.
Yeah.
So when that genie gets out of the bottle,
it's over with,
people are going to be aware of it, and that's all we need. And Texas got that done, and if we can knock that tower down, then all this ongoing, never-ending nonsense with cannabis will hopefully go to bed as well. Because if we can have the most powerful psychedelic on planet Earth, Ibogaine, then surely we can accommodate our friend over here, the hemp plant.
Right. Hey, before we have to go, it's time to go. Tell us where we can find you and support, donate, get involved with Grunt Style.
Yeah, we'd appreciate your support. You can donate to us over at gruntstylefoundation.org.
All right,
again,
thank you so much.
Gruntstylefoundation.org.
Gruntstylefoundation.org. Thank you so much, Will. We've got to go. Next week, we're going to talk to a veteran podcaster. God bless you, and God bless Alabama Hemp. Good night.